The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this one caught my funny bone. It's one of those... is there no depth to the Steve King nonsense? I mean, really. I mean, Steve King right now is demanding an apology from the media and Republican leaders who have condemned the fact that he is, you know, making rape and incest great again. And he's claiming, and this is one of those bizarre moments, because I saw the videotape. I saw the lips moving. I heard the words come out of your mouth. I saw the, they actually wrote the words next to it. So there's the videotape. There are the words in writing. And you could follow along with both of them. You could read the words as they're coming out of his mouth. This wasn't a deep fake. There was a crowd of people around him. It sounded like him. And look, had he claimed this was a deep fake, then I go, hey, maybe. You know, but it sounds logical. And what he said was very clear. He said, what we went through back all the family trees, if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled out the people that were products of rape and incest, would there be any population of the world left if we did that? He said, considering all the wars and all the rape and pillage and that had taken place, and whatever happened to culture and after society, he said, I know I can't certify that I am not a part of that product. And that might actually be part of the problem. Just a thought. I'm here to share some thoughts on the Grand Apology Tour. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come join us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
Now you're the psychiatrist here. Is there you know, like a diagnosis for this guy? I mean, because delusional, partially maybe. I don't know. Is there something we could slap on this?
He's just gross.
Okay.
He's gross.
Is that a medical term?
Not a clinical. I mean, it's not a clinical term. But you know what's going on with him is not necessarily a biological, neurochemical issue, from what I can tell. I mean, this is a social conditioning, cultural conditioning issue, and I think this comes about when people are trying to defend the indefensible. Because why is he even on the topic of rape and incest? I mean, ultimately, it's to sort of justify, the way I took it, that they're not making exceptions for rape and incest and all of these draconian anti-choice, anti-abortion laws that are popping up all over the nation.
Yep.
And so then now you have to justify why rape and incest aren't so bad. And hey, it's because, I mean, hey, look at all of us. We've all, you know, have this probably way back in our family tree. So, hey, it's not so bad. I mean, we're here and we're fine. So it's, again, you know, just trying to find a justification for things that really are unjustified and unjust. And I think that's why it sounds so deplorable, and it is so deplorable. But he doesn't see that. He has no insight into that. And he doesn't think he's wrong, and that's why he's coming out and asking for an apology.
Not demanding. He's not asking. He's demanding an apology. But here's the other part of this, and this is the weird thing. Because, look, I've known people like Steve King.
Yeah.
I know people who are just really way off the beaten path.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, you know, go back to where whatever rock you crawled from, you know, good luck on you. But I move away. What's with all the people in the room who sat and listened to this and nobody seemed to raise their hand and go, hey, Steve, shut the hell up.
I mean, but you've been in those moments. I mean, you've been in those moments that are, you know, cringeworthy, and nobody really knows what to do and nobody really knows what to say. And you just sort of sit there waiting for it to be over. But I think in general, the Republicans are in this position across the board, whether it's Steve King or Trump or, you know, whatever person is coming out and saying these really deplorable things. Because, again, they are all trying to justify really heinous and atrocious policies and a worldview that's actually really heinous and atrocious.
No, so, but I guess my other point on this is, you know, by sitting there and because look, I've gotten up and walked out of rooms when people have said nonsense.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not the one who's willing to just sit there idly by. I'm usually the one who will raise my hand and I don't think so. But you know, to me, this is you know what the Republican Party sadly has been talking about for a very long time. Only he's only dumb enough to be the one out there actually saying this stuff in public.
But I mean, I think they're all saying very dumb things about everything. I mean, with the gun debate, I mean, they're all standing up there and saying very outlandish things that are being legitimized, right? Because the news has to present both sides. So they're just presenting it as, okay, this person said this. But really, when you take a few steps back, it really is outlandish, and it's out of the norm. It's out of the mainstream. But I was just going to say to you when you said you'd be the one to raise your hand and say, you know, I'm out of here or walk away, but that's what makes you not a Republican. And unfortunately, you know, for the Republican Party, that is breaking the, you know, 12th commandment.
Ah, thou shalt not be a Democrat.
And so they have to stand in line. They have to be in formation, and they can't actually break ranks. They have to just sit there and go along with what's being said, because if there's any degree of disunity, then their whole delusion falls apart. It requires buy-in at 100%.
Yeah. But here again, you know, I go back to this, you know, I've actually, you know, told Democrats to sit down and shut up, you know, over dumb things that they've said. You know, granted, they were labor things, but, you know, still. And I think if we were more like that, maybe it wouldn't be okay. Maybe if more people were like me.
But that's what but again, that's why, you know, everybody always criticizes the Democrats of they're in disarray and they're not on the same page and there's so many different camps and nobody, you know, the tent is too big and there's all these different blocks that are, you know, talking at each other and clashing.
That's true.
So it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you'd like to find a happy medium. You want people to be able to speak out and for there to be varied opinions. But I do think that with the Republican Party, there's just no room for that, and that is why things are starting to fall apart at the seams, because it's really hard for them to maintain this level of discipline with things that are just so undisciplined.
Especially with a guy who is clearly devolving before our very eyes.
Exactly.
And I don't know if you saw the tweet today. And I know you don't spend all your time looking at Trump's tweets, but the one that got a lot of, in fact, well, a lot of them got attention today, but the one that got a lot more attention was his tweet at Hillary Clinton, the one that said, wow, report just out, Google manipulated from 2.6 to 16 million votes for Hillary Clinton in 2016 election. He said, this was put out by a Clinton supporter, not a Trump supporter. Google should be sued. My victory was even bigger than thought. So I guess now there were 16 million illegal votes. So he, you know, he won by 14 million votes or 13 million votes.
So you want me to translate it?
please help me figure that out, because I'm struggling.
Right now, Trump feels like a tiny, microscopic man. He feels weak. He feels unliked.
He is unliked.
Stupid. And he feels like the world is crashing down around him. And so the narcissistic defense, the overcompensation, is the grandiosity. It is the bravado. It's, look how many votes I really won by. All these polls are wrong. The economy's doing great, right? Everything has to be this hyperbolic 180-degree difference from what's actually happening in reality. He has to evade himself. He has to evade all of these really negative things and wrap himself up in this, you know, world of delusion where he's on top, he's winning, everything is great, there's no problems, I don't need to do anything differently, everybody else is wrong, it's just a conspiracy against me. And that's how he copes with these situations. It's how he's coped his entire life.
Or it's all fake news, Jane. It's all fake news.
Exactly. Exactly.
So can you help me? Because I turned on the TV this morning. And, you know, the kids were getting ready for school. First day of school. I'm sure you know how that feels.
Yeah.
You know, so we're, you know, making sure their lunches are packed, you know, all that stuff. And on is Scaramucci the Mooch. And he is just, you know, he's got this idea that he's going to put a coalition together and there's going to be, basically a coup. We're overthrowing Donald Trump. Walk me through what had to be going through Trump's mind as he's watching a guy who was, I guess, a friend at one point.
Yeah.
Who has now turned and said, look, for the good of the country, he's losing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we call narcissistic injury. So he is being exposed by someone who he had in line at one point, somebody who was saying all the right things to him, was one of his yes men. And now this person has defected. So he's offended. He's personally offended. He feels slighted. And he feels like, how dare you? Look at all the things I did for you. I mean, I'm sure he'll come out with, more rants about Scaramucci as time goes on.
We gave you 15 minutes in the White House before I fired you.
Exactly, right? So then he has to make it like, to save face, I didn't really care about you. You weren't that great. Nobody's listening to you. Nothing you're saying is really important. You're just mad because I didn't give you X, Y, and Z. And I kicked you out.
Sounds like a jilted lover.
Exactly. The whole narrative has to change because that person is now an enemy because they are no longer telling him exactly what he wants to hear.
Now, to be honest, I put zero credibility in anything Scaramucci has to say.
Sure.
Because, I'm going, where's the profit motive in this for you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the profit motive. I mean, a lot of people are talking about, maybe he's trying to write a book and this is kind of like Omarosa, et cetera. And I do think that's a very large piece of it for any of these people who are, former Trumpers from the inner circle. But I think at the same time, for their own psychological well-being, they have spent so much of their lives and careers kissing this man's butt. And if you think about, doing that day in and day out, and even if you're getting compensated in money or access or whatever it is that's keeping you placated in that moment, ultimately, when you're on the other side of it, it's like, I did that? It's sort of like you have to do something to wash that away. And so you have to come out even more forcefully on the side of, hey, here are all the bad things about this person. Sort of like a vindication in a lot of ways. And I do think that for them, they're sort of trying to cleanse their own souls by doing this. And if they can make some money in the process, so be it. It's like, a BOGO.
Yeah, good point. Hey, here you go. but it's still, it was just one of those moments where I'm reading through some of the tweets and, he's a nut job. He's not a good guy. And I'm going, I can't even imagine I'm imagining him going, where's that button?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is too, is that I think to even be able to function in that environment for as long as these people have done it, really indicates a level of maladaptive personality in them as well, that they were even able to tolerate that and to prostrate themselves into that position. And so ultimately you're dealing with a lot of people who don't necessarily cope well and don't necessarily handle interpersonal conflict well. And this is what Trump brings onto the scene. This is why he's instability in chief, because it's not just him. It's everybody that he brings in on his coattails that's also, a circus as an individual.
Yeah, and, the other part of this is, it's interesting that, while simultaneously bashing Fox News, he's now quoting Fox News, because evidently this story ran like 10 minutes before he tweeted it out on Fox News, on Fox Business. And when I started reading into what this guy's finding was, this Robert Epstein, and his findings, evidently it comes down to 21 people that he made this decision on.
Yeah.
So he's now saying that based on these 21 people who claim that they've changed their mind, we can now extrapolate that out to being somewhere between 2.6 and 16 million. I'm going, I want this guy doing... I want this guy doing my, whatever my wealth is, and trying to figure out how wealthy I am. Because, wow, the exaggeration, huge. I could be as rich as Trump if this guy did it. or not. Maybe I already am.
Right. But did you see Hillary's response?
I did. And well, you know, hey, she's right. You know,
she is right. I mean, this is the only way you can respond to this. Because again, you know, I do think that, like you said, Trump is definitely watching Fox, even though he's, you know, criticizing them at the same time for, you know, presenting news that isn't as favorable to him as he would like it to be. But ultimately, I mean, you know, I think the absurdity of it all is the fact that this is a man who watches whatever propaganda on television and literally puts that into his address to the company, to the country. I mean, because obviously the tweets are now official presidential, quote unquote, communication.
Yeah, can you imagine what his library is going to look like? I mean, I was in Dallas. I went to George W. Bush's presidential library. And, you know, I was like, you know, hey, you know, I can't wait to see what they come up with. And it was interesting. They had some interactive, like, video game stuff. You got to be the decider guy, which was fun. You got to see Twisted Metal from 9/11 and all the videos, which was depressing as hell.
Right.
And you got to play this great game. It had a triangle on top of a roller ball. and you tried to balance the powers of government, because that's exactly how you do it.
And that's it?
There was all kinds of stuff. And my favorite display was a kindergarten library that had a whole bunch of my pet goat wasn't there.
I was just about to ask.
Wasn't there
my pet goat?
But there were a bunch of, you know, kids books, you know, like Dr. Seuss stuff on the shelves, and I'm going, you know, is this the reading level? Is this what he's talking about? I mean, there were just so many moments of mockery. And I ultimately found out that they stole the Situation Room, which is a room inside the library. The only question they wouldn't answer me, and I know this is well off topic, the only question the guy wouldn't answer for me, because we did an interview with the guy who runs the place, is how much it cost to get on the Wall of Freedom. Because I don't know if you've been there, but there's a giant wall as you walk in to the main entrance, a giant wall with people's names, like Bill Gates' name on it. And they wouldn't tell me how much it cost. Now, for $1,000, you could get on the digital registry, but they didn't tell me how much it would cost to get ingrained in granite there on the Bush Library. They wouldn't tell me.
You couldn't give me money to put my name on that wall.
You know, but here's the thing. I look at that library and I go, you know, it's
better than what Trump's is
going to be. I can't imagine what Trump's is going to be. Is it just going to be, they give you a bathrobe when you walk in, you get to sit on the toilet and watch Fox News?
A gold toilet, too.
A gold toilet. Since you brought up gold, did you see what he's not going to do to Greenland?
How many days have they spent on that?
No, he's serious. He wants Greenland, man.
But, like, again, as a psychiatrist, I mean, I have to just take it back to that, because this reminds me so much of the mental status exam and the notes that we write clinically about how patients are doing on a day-to-day basis. And something like, I'm going to buy Greenland, you know, I know Jesus, like, you know, he called me yesterday. You know, the commentary that Trump puts out on a daily basis, the delusions, the paranoia, I mean, there's always this persecutory element. There's always a conspiracy. He's always saying really outlandish things. He's always just telling out-and-out mistruths. And you don't know, like, is he really just lying flat out? Or is his reality so distorted? Like when he kept saying that he won this Michigan Man of the Year thing.
I didn't hear that.
He's repeatedly said this over and over and over again. And apparently he said it, you know, at one of his Klan rallies the other night. And so they keep fact-checking it. And, of course, every time they fact-check it, it's not true. and they fact-checked it, like, so many times because he said it so many times. And now this is a man who has told over 12,000 lies. 12,000.
Yeah, I won't even do something I like 12,000 times.
I mean, can you really just put that into perspective if you were to think, okay, Barack Obama told us 12,000 confirmed lies?
Yeah, well, my grandfather always said, you know, there are some people who would lie when the truth would be better.
Yeah.
There he is.
Yeah, and he can't do any better than that. I mean, that's the thing that's so sad about it, is that he's incapable of telling the truth, because he literally lives in a chronic delusion every single day that he wakes up. You know, and it's not a chronic delusion that can even be medicated. There is no medication that you can give this man for the degree of narcissism and perfectionism that he has about himself. He's incapable of seeing the reality of who he really is and what he really does and what the impact his actions, you know, have on people. He's unable to see any of that. It's why he should have never been put in the White House. But again, I mean, there he is.
I didn't want him to go in the White House.
I know.
Sorry.
None of us here did, at least.
So let me ask you, there's a story banging around that for a little bit there was some scuttle that Trump might be unhappy with Mike Pence. Evidently on Sunday, he said he was very happy with Mike Pence. Never had a better guy. He said amazing people. He went on this whole thing. Is this the kiss of death in a narcissist world?
Oh, always. But at the same time, no, but he's not happy with anyone. He's not even happy with himself. I mean, the idea that he can genuinely be happy about anyone, I think, is a fallacy. You know, it's a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour, day-by-day thing with him. And if you just fail to give him the praise and the support and the encouragement that he thinks you should be giving him, even if you're doing some degree of all that, but if it's not enough, if it doesn't meet his specification and his need and his desire, then he's unhappy with you, and he has no use for you. And that's why he can go against somebody like Fox, who you know, is doing everything they can to brown nose him every day. But at the same time, all it takes is one slip up. And then at that moment, it can be all out war.
Yeah. Well, let's hope. Let's hope they have one more slip up. We'll see how that works. Because today he sent out a tweet saying that 51%, he's got 51% approval. I wonder why he just didn't put out, you know, like 99%.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, the fact that he had some level of restraint, that shows you that he really knows how bad the number is.
Yeah.
So there was some inflation, just, you know. He couldn't go that far.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you. I saw this story about a suicide prevention hotline, a 988 number. If you're feeling suicidal, depressed, whatever, you can evidently, we're going to put out 988 as the suicide prevention lifeline, they call it. Mm-hmm. To me, this you know, I got a couple of questions. You know, are suicides up? Is this something that has to do with this administration? I mean, and is it just have to do with conservative policies overall? I'm curious because I'm looking at this. I'm going, you know, this seems like an interesting time for this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely suicide rates are up over the last, you know, decade, a little bit more than a decade that they've been tracking this. They continue to see sharp rises. You know, used to be it was sort of bimodal. You could sort of see it in the younger ages, adolescents, early 20s, and then it would spike again around the 60s, late 50s, 60s, going into the 70s. But now we're just sort of seeing it popping up all over the place. We're seeing a lot of unintentional overdoses.
So is that suicide, though?
Well, in some cases it gets kind of called that. And so I think in terms of the numbers, there's a lot of cases where you aren't exactly sure what was going on there. But at the same time, the drug abuse rate and the suicide rate are both rising dramatically at the same time. And we've seen that over the years. And that's another important reason why Obamacare needed to be passed and why there needed to be special provisions for making sure people got substance abuse treatment and mental health care, you know, at the same time. But again, as we've seen that law be attacked and dismantled across the board, we're seeing that those people who already had such a high need for services still aren't really getting those services. And so there isn't really anything in place. You know, the wait times to get in to see a mental health professional are really long, and a lot of times it's way easier for people to get their hands on heroin, methamphetamines, a lot of the street drugs, than it is for them to actually be in, you know, certified clinical treatment. And so, yes, I think a lot of that is exacerbated by the government that we have in place and what their, you know, recipe is for trying to fix these problems. I mean, we have people who aren't even acknowledging that this is a problem. And, you know, the other thing that we've seen, we talked about GWB, in terms of the veteran suicide rate. Since the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, that suicide rate has jumped, and it hasn't been mitigated. And so, you know, that's where also the gun debate comes in. You know, we do have, you know, the mass shootings and the gun violence, but we also have a lot of people who kill themselves with guns. Did they have a legal right to own?
No.
So, you know, so that also plays a major role in terms of people's access to things that they can, you know, successfully kill themselves with. We've seen a lot of celebrity suicides in recent times, a lot of big-name celebrities that have killed themselves.
Yeah, I think of Robin Williams. I'm going, there's a guy who's got, he had the world by the short hairs, and you just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. So do you think this 988 is going to help? Curious thoughts? Couldn't hurt?
You know, in residency, we all had to take turns, you know, carrying a suicide pager, is what we called it. And basically, it was a pager that was connected to a suicide hotline. When somebody called, we would get on the phone. This is when we worked at the Veterans Administration. And you know, a lot of times we would field those calls. And ultimately, the goal is to get that person into acute treatment so that they can be seen. And if they need to be admitted to the hospital, et cetera, you do those things acutely. But again, the question goes back to, okay, on the other end of the hotline call, what resources are there for the family in the community? At a, you know, if it's a kid, what resources do they have at their school to try to sustain that person and make sure their depression is treated or whatever issue is going on that's making them feel so hopeless? You know, is there any way that that can be mitigated? If we don't have those resources in place, you know, the phone call may, you know, save a couple of cases on the front end, but then on the back end, if we're not actually connecting those people to care, ultimately, how much difference are we making? And so we really have to think about getting policies in place that can sustain people rather than just sort of doing a spot treatment in a crisis.
No, kind of where my thought was going, but yeah. I just needed clarification, and I appreciate it. But always great talking with you, Jane. I appreciate the time. Always fun. Thank you so much.
You too. Have a great week.
You as well. Our good friend Propane Jane. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, one of my favorite Twitter commentaries.